They dissolved into discussion about mineral affinity as they made their way cautiously down the stairs. "Here we go!" I was watching their faces as they stepped onto the third floor. Their shock was gratifyingly evident. Dale.
"Fortifications?" Hans thundered. "What the crap kind of mob hides behind fortifications?"
Adam spoke up, concern in his voice.
"Smart ones?"
His statement made everyone go quiet for a moment.
"Shit.
What do we do? Go up and knock? Hop over the walls? They aren't that high."
Evan grumped a bit, pickaxe itching to be swinging. "We do knock, but not with our hands. Nah, we use the door knocker. Tom, pull out your hammer. You're up,"
Hans directed with a sly grin. He glanced at Evan. "You're gonna like this part."
Tom placed his ingot hammers into his bag and pulled out his oversized warhammer.
"I've missed you,"
he whispered to it, caressing it lightly. He walked directly up to the large door, swinging his hammer with a roar. He had only ever used the full force of his weapon on a stationary object once before, and a member of his old team had died because of it. The weapon impacted the doors with the force of a localized earthquake, blasting the doors to splinters. Those shards flew into the goblin warriors huddled behind the fortification, killing several of them instantly. The remaining warriors roared and charged from their breached fort, swinging deadly weapons with great speed and accuracy. Dale's team joined the fight. Dale ran at an exceptionally large specimen that was wielding a warhammer and releasing saliva with every roar. Dodging its initial assault, Dale stepped forward, swinging a 1-2 punch. The first swing hurt Dale far more than the mob, but the second blow shattered his victim's collarbone and interrupted the flow of blood traveling through its arteries for a moment. This caused the creature to collapse for an instant, almost unconscious. Dale pressed his attack, his next punch cracking the skull and scrambling brain tissue. Dale let himself be too focused on inspecting his prone challenger, and an arrow sliced into his thigh. He dropped to a knee with a yell, hand clapping to the wound to try and slow the blood flow. Rose countersniped the archer, pinning it to a wall across the compound. Adam tripped a mob that was running at Rose with his staff, then used the sharpened end to stab it through the heart. Hans was playing with his foes. Three of them were trying to land a blow while he moved scant inches at a time, learning their attack patterns. He decided that he had a good handle on how they moved and attacked, so he drew his own weapon and killed the three with a quick spin and a rapid stabbing. Taking a moment to survey the battle, he turned just in time to soak his front in a wave of blood and gore.
"Oh, come on! This is exactly why I didn't want you to be using that oversized killing machine in here,"
Hans bellowed at Tom. Tom looked at the clean freak with an excited grin.
"I had been under the impression that you wanted me not to use this for fear of draining my essence. Now I understand why you were so adamant."
"Did we get them all?"
Dale ground out. Trying to focus on his team was difficult when a foreign body was embedded in his flesh.
"We did. Hold on, Dale."
Adam dropped into a crouched position next to his team leader, working feelers of essence into the inflamed flesh around the arrow. When he had closed off the nerve endings, he carefully pulled the arrow. As he suspected, it had a barbed head. He started digging with a small dagger, increasing the flow of blood from the wound.
"Drink a potion, Dale. I can't heal you at the same time as performing surgery."
"Evan, you mind?"
Evan stepped forward, uncorking a bottle and pressing it to Dale's lips. Dale gulped it down as Adam moved away. The pain suddenly returned as the essence stopped flowing. Dale shot a bit of the potion out of his nose as he choked.
"What a nice place to sit and cultivate for, say, 10 minutes?
Dale laughed a bit desperately. The others chuckled, sitting down. Hans decided he would rather look around the area and began exploring the perimeter, taking Evan with him. Tom finished collecting the armor and weapons used by the mobs and sat down to cultivate as well.
"What are these things?"
Dale sniffed with disgust as the last of the bodies began turning to ooze.
"They look a little like goblins,
but they are so much bigger and well-balanced. If all goblins looked like this, they would likely be accepted as a sentient race instead of a monster race,
Rose told him with hope blooming in her words. She had a soft spot for creatures with multiple races in their heritage.
Then what do regular goblins look like? Hans came back just then.
Goblins look, sound, and smell like sickly children who drank too much and can't control their bowels. They are generally hated by all of the races and used as a warning against mixing the bloodlines.
Oh, so that is why people act so poorly towards half-breeds. That's too bad.
Dale didn't catch the look Rose sent his way. She couldn't tell if he was being serious or an asshole.
They can't choose their parents, after all.
Pretty much, Hans nodded. By the way, Evan found a likely spot for mining, so...
Mission accomplished?
They could all hear Evan's pick swinging now, as well as his cheerful chanting. A low layer of dust started rolling toward them after a few minutes, but it usually vanished before it got too close. There were benefits to mining in the dungeon.
We simply sit and cultivate? No fighting? No real guarding?
Tom looked around at the nodding faces.
I will try not to be bored.
He focused on the pattern he had been building in his center and continued to cultivate. They sat that way, working hard to build their internal essences, when a dungeon goblin poked its head in through the wreckage of the gate.
It appears they are respawning.
There was another small battle. This time the defenses worked in Dale's group's favor, as their archer could not find a way to target them. The goblins had to enter only a few at a time and were cut down quickly. Soon, the group was back to cultivating, doing their best to ignore the sounds of rocks shattering behind them. Hans spoke up.
It appears to be about a 30-minute time frame for the goblins to return. I don't know why it takes longer down here. Maybe they are harder to create?
They fought another two groups before Evan came back, smiling broadly and coated in debris.
I think I'm gonna like this floor a lot.
He was dragging a pack full of raw metal chunks, so bulky that he could hardly move.
Maybe we can put that in our sacks for you?
Adam offered, looking at the hoard of metal.
I don't know how you're going to get that up the stairs otherwise.
After some good-natured arguing, Evan accepted the offer, and they split up the miners' goods. They attacked another fortification to see if it followed the same layout, and ended up having a much harder time of it. These goblins were prepared for the group and didn't bunch together behind the gate. When Tom smashed it open, they poured through the wreckage at him, ensuring he was hard-pressed for several moments until his team came to the rescue. There were additional archers who took up position on the walls, firing down at the group. Dale had a hard time fighting while dodging arrows, but Hans weaved in and out of attacks as though he were out for a casual stroll. Rose focused on killing the ranged snipers, while Adam kept an eye out for anyone getting injured or enemies getting too close. Evan watched the team working together to take down the enemy, their bickering and friendly jibes put away for less dangerous times. He was impressed, and when the last goblin fell, he applauded them before running off to check for metals in the wall. The team sat down to relax, breathing deeply and preparing their bodies for an influx of essence. They were just at the 25-minute mark when Tom suddenly looked up, gasped in pain, and began sweating black filth. His eyes dripped tears of blood and blackness, and his breathing became ragged. Dale leapt to his feet.
"What's happening? Is it poison?"
Tom couldn't answer, but Hans gripped Dale and pulled him back.
"He's breaking into the D-ranks. This is going to be difficult. We can't expect him to be able to move himself. All of his mind is turning inward.
Someone grab him and put him in a defensible location. What shit timing! Move!"
Dale figured that the others had been covered in filth from him before, and it was time to return the favor. He gripped Tom under the arms and dragged him toward the one-man mining operation. He had to adjust his grip several times. The black goop was slippery. There was a light trail of the substance leading to Tom when he was settled against the wall in a seated position.
"They're coming!"
Hans shouted to the team. At the previous location, when the goblins had tried to take back their fort, they came stealthily. or try to at least. Here, they were sprinting down the path, howling at the top of their lungs.
What? What is different?
Dale had a sneaking suspicion that there was a reason that this small goblin horde was intent on their position.
Cal! You are a cheating asshole!
Cal.
Hey, it wasn't me that made your teammate decide that an unmapped floor was the best place to go unconscious. How long does that last, by the way?
I chuckled at him.
Screw you!
Ha! Yes, thanks for not answering on my turn. Now I can throw harder mobs at you. Such an easy question, too.
Dale was fuming as I opened the doors I had been hiding mobs behind, and the now imposing form of the goblin shaman stepped in to join the fight. He was mostly hidden behind the advancing warriors, but he started dancing and chanting almost instantly. I had found out that there was good reason for the dancing, at least outside the dungeon. The movement pushed the shaman from areas of low concentrations of essence to areas of slightly higher concentrations. The dancing had a similar effect to what I did, which was to collect the unrefined essence in an area and use that for incantations instead of personal essence. I didn't know why humans, elves, and the like didn't use this form of incantation. Either they didn't know about it, or they thought it was primitive. Either way, I was just glad they limited themselves. The dancing and chanting grew in franticness, culminating in a wave of combined air and infernal essence. A dark form congregated in front of him, then drifted toward the battle. Hans saw it first.
"Wraith!" he shouted in a light panic. "Enchanted or inscribed weapons only. Adam, a celestial barrier on me, now!"
Adam began weaving his staff in front of him, chanting a bit.
Huh. Maybe they do use a similar technique. I looked at the essence around him, but all of the essence powering this working was coming from Adam. It seemed like a waste to me to just ignore all that loose essence around yourself.
Adam finished just as the Wraith joined the battle. A glowing barrier sprang up around Hans, wrapping him in light. The Wraith moved at the speed of darkness now that he was in attacking range. Insubstantial claws pinged off of the light, and Hans started retaliating just as fast. Hans's daggers were slicing tiny slits into the fabric of darkness the Wraith was made of, and blood-like blackness was dripping to the floor. Each time the claws of the Wraith touched the light, a mind-bending amalgamation of celestial and infernal colors was released. The colors drew the eye to them, and the mind of the beholder turned toward insanity. This was the light of chaos. Oddly, at least to the team of adventurers, the goblins ran as the Wraith died. A few stragglers were cut down, but the general consensus was that they didn't do too badly. The humans, and half-human, sank to the floor to recover. They were filthy, covered in blood and gore. They tried to figure out why the goblins had run, but decided that it was because the Wraith died. They waited another 30 minutes, getting tense as they expected another attack. After an hour, they were getting concerned that something was different.
"Go tell Evan to stop attacking the wall. I'm done for today. That Wraith took most of my willpower to defeat," Hans directed Adam.
What would have happened if it had been free to attack you? Dale wondered softly, not sure he wanted an answer. Hans rolled his arms, stretching a bit as he stood.
"They drain you with each attack. They latch on to your center and pull. They suck in essence to continue to exist. Even if they die, if they have landed a blow, there is now a hole in your center that leaks essence. All of their victims die, and usually fairly quickly. Luckily, Adam is a cleric that is a cut above the rest." Adam came back at a run.
"Tom's gone!"
"Heh. About time they noticed."
20. Dale's group scrambled to get into formation and follow the trail of the long-retreated goblins. They had Evan filling Tom's position temporarily, mainly because he was well-armored. Quickly moving through the room, they were easily able to follow the trail of sludge that dripped from Tom. They came upon the large, fortified area that was home to the floor boss and stopped a good distance away. The walls had patrolling goblins, armed with powerful-looking bows.
The doors were wood-banded with iron, a far cry from the simple wood structure the others had at their entrances. Evan grunted.
Now what?
Dale shook his head.
I don't know. We need to get in there. We need to help.
Hans covered Dale's mouth. He had been getting a bit loud at the end.
What we need, he stared into Dale's eyes, is to not panic. If he's dead, charging in an act of vengeance isn't worth getting ourselves killed. If he is alive, we need to make sure he stays that way, and that means a plan. First off, how to get in. Now, we could try and scale the walls, being as sneaky as possible. If we can get in there without anyone noticing us, we might be able to... Hans stopped talking as Dale was shaking his head.
It won't work. I'm sorry to say, they already know we are here. At Dale's words, the goblins on the wall stiffened, then gave up the pretense of watchful ignorance, focusing on their location.
Well, piss. Anyone else have a plan?
Hans griped. Rose thought for a moment.
Why not do what we've been doing?
Hans sighed.
In case you haven't noticed, we are currently missing our giant ginger door knocker.
Forget the door.
Rose grinned for the first time since discovering Tom was gone.
Let's go through the wall.
She hitched her thumb at Evan. Cal.
Dang, these guys are good. I couldn't blow my cover of neutrality by telling the goblins what the adventurers were up to, so I was relying on their training and willingness to die repeatedly. That would surely be enough to stop a few D-ranked and a C-ranked. I sighed. My goblins were going to die. I glared as the adventurers put their plan in motion. Rose fired an arrow, killing one of the archers on the wall. This drove the other archers into cover, and they began firing wildly at the location the arrow had come from. So much for training and willingness to die. While they were hidden from view, the humans basically waltzed up to the wall and began marking out their plans for a new door. Every time a goblin tried to get a look, an arrow either impacted them or sailed by their oversized noses. When Evan reared back for a swing, there were three dead goblins already. The pickaxe came crashing against the thin wall, blasting open a dwarf-sized hole. The goblins started toward the breach in the wall, but were driven back as a hail of arrows and throwing knives came through. Evan took the opportunity to smash another section, creating a large hole and actually collapsing the entire section of wall, killing a few goblins as they either fell into Hans's blades or as stones rained down. Evan took some damage from the falling rock, but his stout frame and heavy armor made the pain laughable. At least he would need to work some dents out. Nothing like creating a minor inconvenience for someone. Take that! Yeah!
Hans and Dale rushed into the compound like avenging angels, throwing themselves recklessly at the defenders. Dale had a new fighting style that was upsetting for me to watch. He dodged, but so poorly that I was sure he was about to have his blood splatter on the floor. Instead, he clunkily avoided attacks and threw punches that were poorly placed. His blows would have been entirely ineffective if he didn't have his inscribed battle gauntlet on. This allowed him to turn weak punches to non-lethal areas into deadly attacks. Hans was a different story entirely. He was fighting with a rage and speed I had never seen him use before. Actually, he was screaming as he repeatedly stabbed a goblin.
Where is he? Stab, stab, stab. Where is my student? Stab, stab, stab.
Hans was furious, and when he attacked, his knife entered and exited a body three times, so fast that it looked like just a single blow. It appeared that he was no longer holding back, no longer trying to teach the others anything. He never stopped marching toward the center of the fortification, though he was moving at a measured pace instead of sprinting. An arrow flew at him. He caught it and whipped it back, treating it like a throwing knife. It hit the bow of the goblin who had fired it, shattering it and ricocheting into the mob's neck. Did he do that intentionally, or was it luck? Either way, no more arrows at Hans. Mental note there. A warhammer-wielding warrior ran at him, and Hans shot forward and delivered a kick to it. The kick chunked the poor goblin. Let me explain. The kick was from his inscribed boot, and blasted the surprised goblin into three separate chunks of flesh.
I don't think we're gonna win this one, I mentioned to Danny. She had a different opinion.
Since he is going all out, way above the level of the mobs, can I too?
She was hovering near the floor boss. Oh, you want to use that?
Go for it, but I'll warn Dale. It's only fair. He'll whine otherwise.
Dale complained about my statement, but was listening intently as he continued to fight.
Dale, since your teammate is going all out, I'm adjusting the floor boss accordingly. For future reference, if a huge party of people come in, or a few overpowered people, I'm going to do my best to kill them. That means lots more mobs, or something like this.
Danny had full control of the boss now, and was standing up. At 7 feet tall, this goblin Amazon was at least 3 times as strong as the other goblins, and would usually carry a warhammer in each hand while wearing standard armor. Right now, we were moving quickly to get ready for a too strong opponent. I activated a rune on the throne that the goblin normally sat on, and her armor crumbled away. A quite expensive way to undress. A stone slid aside, and a large chest shot up from the opening. She opened the chest and pulled on the body-hugging chainmail inside. A double set of battle gauntlets finished her preparations. These were a bit different than the ones Dale wore, as these had large blades that reached to the massive goblin's elbows and extended past her hands. Hans walked into her area right as she finished equipping her weapon, and a throwing dagger punched through her armor and into the muscle on the right side of her abdomen. Danny roared in pain and turned to face the enraged Hans. She hissed at him in true mob style.
Die, worm!
With that, she activated the inscriptions on her weapons and armor. The shiny but easy-to-damage armor, made of pure aluminum, had a column of essence move through it. It glowed bright silver for a moment, before darkening slightly to a silvery purple. Her weapons did the same, but the right hand darkened further as infernal essence raced along it. The left-handed blades sprouted fire-essence-fueled flames along their edges, and she charged. Hans had a moment of surprise that almost cost him his life. He threw another dagger at such high speeds that it vibrated the air in its passing. This hit the armor above Danny's knee and bounced off without a scratch. She kicked her leg forward, adding a bit of a spin as she struck him in the face. His surprise kept him from dodging fully, but his attempt allowed him to keep the bones in his skull from fracturing as he sailed across the room. Hans had barely regained his footing when Danny was over him, stabbing downward with her flame-coated weapon. Hans weaved away, but the intensity of the flame scorched his skin, causing blisters to form on his neck. He crouched and then pushed upward, lifting Danny off the ground and tossing her to the side with an ease that his size made questionable. While she scrambled to her feet, he attacked with his blades. Stab, stab, stab. Clink, clink, clink. His attacks did scratch her armor, but failed to penetrate. She swung at him with her infernal blades, but he crossed his daggers in an X and caught her blow with ease. He pushed, throwing her arm upward. Hans reared back and kicked her in the chest with his powerful boot, sending her into the wall. It shattered on impact, and she lay there stunned for a moment as Hans raced over.
Too strong of armor, huh? Fine.
He stabbed his dagger down into her eye, and she spasmed. He stood straight, then reached down and retrieved his blade. The fight was over.
Nope. Made those modular this time. As he pulled out his dagger, the eye came with it, trailing a severed bundle of nerves.
Look out, Hans!
Dale screamed, saving his friend's life as a wave of heat blistered Hans's back. He had barely escaped by rolling away. Hans came to his feet several feet away, ready to block, but Danny had crossed her blades and was several paces away. He started toward her when the essence around her weapons surged. Hans was very skilled. He kicked off the ground and went straight up, driving his daggers into the ceiling and holding on as a wave of life-ending cold rolled in a path away from Danny. She needed a moment to collect herself. That attack took a lot of channeled essence. A moment Hans didn't allow. He threw a dagger at the crossed blades, and this time they were so cold that the impact shattered them. Now, these blades had essence moving through them, and as they broke, they momentarily created runes that shouldn't have existed. Uncontrolled essence rushed into them, creating a tiny gravity well that crushed the goblin Amazon into a small orb. It only lasted a moment, but the ground in all directions had shattered, and the high-density ball of matter crashed to the ground and embedded itself there. I took the opportunity to begin absorbing it, just so the group didn't get a ball of condensed mithril.
Danny, are you okay?
I hadn't seen what happened to her, but I wasn't too worried. She was essentially essence, and a small thing like gravity shouldn't be harmful.
I'm fine,
she was returning to my room.
That was so much fun. I have so much training to do. Gah! I can't believe he won. I had him so far out-armored.
I was exceedingly relieved, and I had a new rune to research. I looked back at the battle. Well, at this point it was over, so former battle. Hans was stalking around looking for Tom, but Adam found him first.
Get over here! It's bad!
Adam began shouting. They rushed over to find Tom trussed to a pole over a vat, where the black sludge was still dripping off of him. The vat was collecting the anthracite liquid into a jug, and there were little pieces of material stuck in him that ensured the sludge would continue to come out of him as his essence tried to purge foreign objects from his body.
Oh, God.
Rose looked sick.
His arm.
His arm, or more accurately, stump, was poorly tied off, blood draining from what remained. The goblins had been trying to tear his warhammer away from him, but even with his attention inward, his body had refused to release it. After struggling with the unresisting form, they scratched their heads, shrugged, and used their rusty knives to chop Tom's arm off just below the shoulder. It was not a clean cut, and they had needed to saw for several minutes. But Tom was finally warhammerless.
Adam was working on the bleeding stump.
I can't get the wound closed. He is losing too much blood. If I don't work to replace that, he will die either way.
Hans grimaced.
I really hope you can't feel this.
A layer of fire appeared around his hand, and he gripped the open wound. The smell of charring flesh filled the air, and Dale had to struggle not to gag. Evan's stomach rumbled as the aroma reached him. He looked around sheepishly as the others glanced his way.
Right, yeah, well, I have orc blood in me. It's not like I'm gonna go take a bite of him. Sheesh! Bring me in front of the Protectorate.
Is he stabilizing?
Hans's words were sharp, directed at Adam.
Yes, though that is going to be an ugly scar,
Adam muttered. He paused and looked around.
On the other hand, he is completely fine.
Rose fixed him with a look.
You are making a pun? Now? Really?
Right. Go find the treasure. Take anything not nailed down, anything that we can sell.
Hans had several odd looks sent his way.
What?
Regrowing an arm is stupid expensive. It takes months to get the hand bones correct. He is going to need a lot of money as a down payment.
We can do it, though. He will be fine, I promise.
Hans patted Tom on his unmoving back.
Welcome to the in-debt group. You're late to the party.
With Hans's words, the group relaxed greatly. Adam released a weak chuckle.
Going to the university in the capital would cost more than an arm, if I remember correctly.
No joke. Higher education,
Rose responded, finally allowing herself to see the humor in the situation.
They take an arm and a leg.
The group started to laugh while Evan looked on in horror.
You people are pretty dark.
He wasn't making eye contact with anyone and was fidgeting with his pickaxe. Dale responded, since that comment had killed the moment.
He's gonna get his arm back, and he survived. That is the best outcome we could have ever hoped for. Far better than we had hoped. We are just trying to mask our pain, Evan. Please don't think we are uncaring.
Ah, I see. Gallows humor.
Evan grinned.
Well, if you need quick money, take that jug. Breakthrough oil from a fire cultivator is explosively flammable and goes for a good price, since it is so rare. That should help pay for the work he needs done, at least a bit. Bring it to the alchemist we rescued, and I bet you'll get an even higher price than normal.
Good call.
They began searching for a treasure chest, and sure enough, they found it in a slightly hidden alcove. The glow potion on it had them all excited, and for a moment after opening it, they were disappointed at the contents. Sure, there was a handful of gold coins and a couple small silvery ingots, but potions in a chest of this rarity? They felt cheated, until Evan took a look and nearly shat himself.
That's not silver, you brain-damaged, monster-loving bunny punches. That's aluminum!
Evan was almost drooling as he saw the processed ingots. Then a sick look crossed his face.
For the love of God, don't sell that here or tell anyone where you got it. This floor will be overrun by dwarves. They'll look for ingots like that one by smashing rocks with their pickaxe density erections if they get wind of the dungeon-releasing processed aluminum.
Rose shuddered.
Thanks for that visual.
It was pretty vivid, wasn't it?
Hans laughed, picking Tom up and draping him around his neck like a scarf.
Let's get going. The sooner Tom gets to a safe location to heal, the better.
Just before they made it out, I whispered in Dale's ear.
Torture wasn't my intention. I told them to just kill him, but they wanted that oily stuff. I hope this doesn't ruin our fun.
Dale. Dale's mind buzzed.
That was what the dungeon was worried about? That Tom surviving was a reason to dislike the dungeon more than he already did?
He shook his head.
What an alien mind.
He looked at his friend, not unconscious, but not aware of what was happening to him. Tom was pale from blood loss, but luckily the healing center was right at the top of the stairs. They stepped into the open and handed Tom over reluctantly. Adam went with him, but the rest were ordered away as the healers got to work. The group trudged through the mounting snow, hurrying toward the river. There had been an unexpected benefit of the dwarves setting up shop in town. While the dwarves had received space for the walls, a barracks and an orphanage for free, they had purchased the rights to an area along the river. Now, normally Dale refused any offers to purchase land next to the river, as it would be too easy for a business to cut off access to the only water source in the area. But the dwarves, they set up a bathhouse. It was expensive to use, but certainly worth it to stay clean. At least to Dale's group. Hygiene was becoming an issue, and Dale was thinking about providing funds from the city to buy the bathhouse and make it a public service. They soaked in their respective areas, enjoying the feeling of warmth after the bitter cold. Their armor and clothes were being cleaned at the same time, for an additional fee, of course. They were just finishing, pulling on their clothes, when a courier ran up to them.
"Lord Dale?"
the young man said questioningly. Hans jumped in.
"Careful there, youngster. Technically you need to address him by his highest rank. In this case, it would be Your Grace, as Dale is a duke. He doesn't care, but other nobles tend to be a bit jumpy about that sort of thing."
Dale glared at his friend. Conversely, the courier was nodding seriously.
"I'll spread the word. I'll ask the Messenger's Guild to give us some training in court etiquette. At least that explains what happened to poor Jeff."
He looked at Dale.
"Your Grace, I was asked to inform you that your friend is stable and still undergoing the breakthrough process. He will be there from 3 days to a week, depending on his willpower."
Dale nodded and flipped him a coin. The courier bowed slightly and started to leave, then saw that the coin was gold. His eyes widened and he looked back, but Dale nodded and made a shush motion, finger on lips. He got a deep bow in return before the man returned to work.
"You are going to spoil them," Hans poked his friend in the side.
Dale allowed a conniving look to cross his face.
"Who will they go to first with important news? The generous and noble Dale, or the spoiled lord who makes unknowable things happen to their friend Jeff?"
Hans approvingly laughed.
"You are getting good at this politics thing. What do you want to do for the next few days? Find a replacement teammate or take a vacation?"
"How about we sell the ingots and find a flesh mage to fix Tom? Oh, and tell Father Richard about those weapons. How much is it going to cost to fix up Tom, if you can estimate for me?"
"They always charge half up front, so somewhere between 10 to 15 platinum."
Hans was fixated on the smell of roasted meat coming from the pleasure house.
"What?
1,000 to 1,500 gold is half of what they'll charge?
Dale was aghast. Hans had an odd look on his face.
Dale, we made more than triple that on this single dungeon run. Before taxes, of course. Stop thinking about money as a long-term thing. You are going to be around long enough that you will eventually amass a huge amount of money.
See, you say that, Dale rounded on his friend, but aren't you in your 60s and in debt to a flesh mage?
As soon as we sell off the stuff from this run, I won't be, even after paying for Tom's arm, Hans countered easily. To change the subject, what was the deal with that boss?
That thing nearly killed me.
Humph. Dale thought about how to answer that without giving away too much information.
I think it was a reaction to you going all out like that. Did you see how it tossed away its old armor and weapons as you went all furious and stabby?
A dungeon that scales its difficulty to the people fighting?
Doubtful.
Hans had a faraway look.
I wouldn't go that far. For instance, we stay out of floor 4 because we die very painfully, but that was certainly a reaction to you.
Dale promised. He glanced over his shoulder after hearing a noise, spotting Minya storming toward them.
Incoming!
Why are you ignoring me, Dale?
Minya growled as she stomped toward them.
Because I think that your ideas are insane,
Dale answered frankly. Minya stopped, throwing up her arms.
Wow.
Yeah, that was harsh, Dale,
Hans admonished him. He turned toward Minya.
Hello, my name is Hans. Before you ask, yes, I am single.
Not interested. Dale, you know as well as I do that this dungeon is different. It needs special care or things are going to go very bad, very fast. You need to put me on the council,
Minya demanded, daring him to argue.
Dale took the dare. It isn't going to happen. Also, if you don't stop asking people to let themselves be sacrificed to the dungeon, I'm going to bring you up on charges for attempted murder.
Dale caught the flicker of shock on her face.
Yeah, I heard about that. And the cult you're starting. If I hear about you starting trouble, I will either banish you or put you in jail. You could be the first person to make it to a cell that wasn't drunk.
The others usually just died.
You're making a mistake, Dale,
Minya promised darkly.
It isn't me you are going to have to worry about. I won't do anything that could get me kicked out. You don't want to talk? Fine. But when this city starts burning, come to me. I'll happily save you all, no matter how crazy you think I am.
She stormed off, the snow melting out of her way.
What a woman,
Hans and another voice breathed at the same time. Hans looked over at the other speaker. Glaring.
Who are you?
Dale looked over to see a ruggedly handsome man dressed in completely unsuitable, bright-colored, fluttering clothes.
My name, good sir, is Bracca.
He swept his feathered hat off, bowing deeply. He righted himself, pulling the hat back on as a stiff breeze blew snow over the exposed area.
Good God, you are all insane living here.
How can we be of service?
Dale asked to be polite, continuing his trek toward lunch.
Since you ask,
Dale groaned at these words from Bracker.
I am a humble bard seeking my fortune in these frozen wastes. More pressingly, I am looking for a place to survive the winter. I am told you two may hold some sway over the proprietor of this fine dining establishment.
Just, sure. Come on. We'll introduce you to Madame Chandra.
Dale was soon rid of the man, but as they started lunch, musical notes began floating into the room.
More weirdos.
Nah, bards are cool,
Hans told him around a full mouth.
Give it a month, and he'll be the most popular man in the city.
Good job getting him on your good side.
I'd advise you to keep him there, unless you want unflattering songs about you to be drifting around. Rose perked up. She had joined them recently.
Right. Don't you have some songs out there?
No, Hans asserted firmly. We're going to the capital for a few days. Want to join us?
Sure. Looking for a buyer?
Mm-hmm.
They left for the portal, planning on being back in 3 days, the earliest that Tom might wake up. 21.
I think it is ready.
I was looking at the dual gates in my test room. They were as similar as I could make them, actually grown as a single unit and then separated into two distinct items. They were esoteric inscriptions spanning the entirety of the archways, mirrored perfectly from one to the other. Along these inscriptions were embedded cores for storing essence, behind which were hidden runes for essence gathering.
Well, don't keep me waiting. Do it!
Danny was watching raptly, ready to either cheer our success or run like a maniac upon failure. I activated the runes at the base of each arch, allowing them to start accumulating essence. Now it was a waiting game. I had designed these arches to power up slowly, filling the cores with a minimum amount of essence before allowing the next rune in the series to activate. This way, I could monitor the progress and halt it if there were an error in the rune script. Also, it would allow the two arches to activate simultaneously, which I felt was important.
Is it going?
Danny impatiently flew in a circle.
Yes, but it'll take a while to gather essence.
I paused a moment.
Didn't we talk about this earlier?
You mumbled a few things under your breath when I asked you questions about it. Does that count?
She replied on just this side of civility. I felt a bit sheepish.
I get a bit focused.
A bit? Okay, and a 2-mile-wide meteor tends to kill off a bit of life upon impact,
she teased me.
Right, wait. So a meteor is a chunk of stone or metal that drops out of the sky really fast, correct?
Just let me make fun of you without having to explain myself.
Ugh, fine. Don't satisfy my curiosity.
Well, I've been pumping extra essence into the room there, so it is being collected much faster than it normally would. If you want to watch, it is about to activate, I informed my grouchy best friend. She looked over at the arch as the final rune activated, entranced by the interplay of essence as it weaved together from the center of each rune, traveling into the exact midpoint of the air in the archways. I should note, there were cores on the frame that were specifically designed to absorb all of the corruption from the essence as it was gathered. That meant that the essence reaching outward now was as pure as I could possibly make it, so it looked like a slow-moving lightning. It connected, branched, wove and unwove itself through all the other strands of essence until an effect began to make itself noticeable. A hole began forming, quickly and silently expanding. I was watching how essence around the arches was reacting, preparing to stop the process if there was an adverse reaction. The portal was now open and looked like a flat soap bubble. From one side, I was able to look through the portal and see out the other, while from the back, there was only a slow-moving swirl of colors. The colors confused me until I realized that it was only the interplay of purified essence with the loose essence in the room. It didn't seem to be affecting the stability of the portal, so I saw no reason to try messing with it.
It's beautiful, Cal. You create the coolest things. It is so quiet, too. The one outside always hums and sounds vaguely threatening.
Danny was debating on getting close or not.
Is it safe?
Let's find out.
I created a rabbit in the room and directed it to walk through the light.
Splatter! No.
What just happened?
Danny demanded, dodging falling chunks of rabbit meat.
I'm hoping that the issue is that it entered from the rear of the arch. Let's try making it go through the front, I muttered, as I was creating another test bunny.
You are a cruel being. Nah.
The bunny hopped to the front of the arch, squirming a bit to avoid puddles of blood. It really didn't want to go into the light. I gave it a little mental push. It stepped in, vanishing a bit at a time, reappearing behind itself through the other arch.
Success!
You actually did it!
Danny whooped.
Yes, this is so... Wait a second. What do you mean, actually?
Is it still stable?
She skillfully avoided the question.
Yes, but it is sucking up essence at a prodigious rate. I need to find a way to remedy that, or it won't be a useful portal. Also, I want to replace the stairwells with these wherever possible.
Then people can teleport around the dungeon, and there is a small chance of them failing to use this correctly and exploding. I liked portals.
Always thinking ahead.
Danny morphed into an eye and rolled herself.
How about this? Can you make portal keys? As in, when they make it to a portal, they have to have a specific item in order to get to the next floor?
I could do that. I paused. Actually...
Yes?
I could take that a step further. What do you think the odds are of a group like Dale's dying on the first floor? I rhetorically asked her.
Pretty low. Unless they come in bound and gagged.
Danny remembered a situation Dale had been in recently. Right. So why make them go through that early area? If they can make it to a level once, it is pretty likely they can do it again. How about I make an attuned key that allows them to return to whatever level they like? That way there would be a better chance of them going to harder levels right away, which means a higher chance of them failing to survive. My argument made sense to Danny, so she agreed that I could do it. The hard part was going to be altering the structure of the portal so that it remained inactive and charging while accepting incoming key requests via proximity. I explained this to Danny, much to her disgust.
Just make things happen and let me explain it away as magic, would you?
She was unbelievably uninterested in the technical details. I made the adjustments, creating a single long archway which I split into 20 arches. I wanted 2 arches per level at the start and after the boss. I kept a few as spares in case of further expansion. I added all the inscriptions and cores to the arches and let them sit for a few hours to accumulate all of the essence needed. The keys were an interesting artifact. I decided to create them as a short, modular chain. At the end of the chain was a chunk of gemstone with a tiny core buried in the center. When a gemstone was collected from a boss in the dungeon, it could be added to the chain. This would grant access to that level directly when the correct gem was touched as the holder walked through the portal. To that end, I altered the first floor a little bit. It had a clear quartz window in it that allowed viewing into the second floor boss room, and was directly below the inscribed celestial quartz. I replaced the clear quartz with a clear pane of fluorite, and began filling it with water corruption after adding a few runes. Now, I wanted to make sure my previous efforts weren't wasted, so I made a clear key gem that would exit at the top of the stairwell into the church area above. The first floor would be accessed via a topaz key gem, from inside the dungeon, of course, the second floor via a gem of fluorite, the third floor with an emerald, and the fourth floor with a ruby. I made sure that the viewing panes reflected these changes, though it meant removing large sheets of minerals. I wanted to have my own stylistic theme, and no one could tell me no. Okay, Danny could. But if she didn't know about it, she couldn't stop me. Returning to the explanation of my portal setup, I only allowed incoming portals to connect to the start of each level. I wouldn't want someone taking a boss by surprise. I thought about making the chain as a bound item, but decided against it. After all, if someone too weak stole it and entered the dungeon, they would be almost assured to die. A too strong person wouldn't be bothered by the first levels at all, so it felt like a logical wash to me. The next step was testing. I spaced the arches out and brought a goblin in to test them for me. I'd use rabbits, but they lacked opposable thumbs. I wonder if I can fix that. No, focus. I was glad that I'd spaced them out. Most of them worked just fine, but 2 had slight variation in the rune script. One of them exploded, and I lost a goblin. I cleaned up the room before bringing in a new one. When I found the next failure, I wasn't even aware of it for a moment because the goblin simply never reappeared in second portal. I waited, but it seemed that this arch had sent the goblin elsewhere. I didn't know where, and I decided not to try and find out. I let that one stay on after deactivating the essence accumulators, and it eventually was just pretty stone again. I reabsorbed it, then began moving the arches throughout the dungeon. I was sure that they would be a conversation starter in the morning. Dale.
Thank you for coming on such short notice, sir, Dale respectfully said to the flesh mage entering the bitter cold of Mountaindale. They had just stepped through the portal and were hurrying toward the church. The flesh mage nodded, a regal motion that caused a flutter of jealousy to race through Dale. The man had obviously worked on his own body and used himself as advertisement. He was the most symmetrical person Dale had ever seen. He was almost disturbingly handsome, with chiseled muscles and a powerful frame. His voice was deep and mellow. Dale had no doubt that this was the most charismatic man that he had ever talked to. It was actually intimidating on a deep level.
"Thank you for your advance payment. I hope that you understand my reluctance to come here, and I thank you for allowing me to bring along a guard," the mage uttered in a honeyed tone.
"Why not?" Hans tried to say brightly.
"It only costs us an extra gold per week."
"Exactly," the mage agreed, not noticing the sarcasm.
"I assure you, Your Grace, Nez is worth every copper."
The black-haired, blue-eyed swordsman walking ahead of them didn't bother to join the conversation. His gaze was flickering between the people walking around. He vanished suddenly, only a zap and flash of light allowing the group to follow his progress after a moment. He was next to a tent, sword against the throat of a dark elf. He uttered his first words since they had met him.
"Assassins. Instructions."
"Hold!" Dale cried out before the mage could speak. "The dark elves are here by my request and are acting as the policing force for this city. Hurting him would be a very bad idea."
Runez the Blade nodded, stepping away from the elf and sheathing his sword.
"My apologies. Normally, beings that are stereotypically assassins are something that a host would mention to others before bringing them into his territory."
The elf looked at the swordsman and nodded, vanishing from sight again. Dale winced at the intended rebuke.
"Sorry about that."
The mage waved a hand to show that there was no harm done.
"He is just proving his worth again. He does that. Where is the patient?"
"Ah, this way." They moved into the chapel, finding Tom propped up in a ring of intense fire. The mage looked at him critically.
"He is currently undergoing breakthrough? I'm not going to work in that fire. We'll have to wait until he is aware. I do charge by the day."
Dale agreed with the flesh sculptor, as it was hard to argue. They found an empty room for the mage, and Dale decided to leave him there and walk around to see the improvements in the area. He was almost to the exit when two people carrying a litter with a bleeding man ran in. Dale almost ignored this, but realized that injuries from the dungeon usually resulted in people coming up the stairs directly into the church. He followed them, waiting for their explanation.
"So we found him like this out on the mountain."
The speaker was a local, someone who had lived on the mountain their whole life. He took off his hat and was holding it in his hands, fidgeting while he talked to Dale.
"He told us that his horse had died and he were from some village down south."
He paused, chewing on a fingernail.
"They's been attacked. Some kind of human-looking monsters. Apparently them same monsters been following the river, killing everyone that's in their way."
A small coughing fit.
"He's been trying to warn people, but he's been barely ahead of them this whole time. I think he lost him at the bottom of the mountain, where the river waterfalls down."
The other local simply nodded along, saying, "Yup," every once in a while. Dale thanked them, told them to go get some food on his credit, and went off to gather the council. It took nearly an hour for the members to gather. Apparently, they took less notice of messengers coming to talk to them than they did Dale. Go figure. Dale wasted no time. As soon as they were gathered, he launched into an explanation of the situation. Unfortunately, they treated the problem with much less care than Dale desired.
"Dale," Amber countered soothingly, "you can't fly into a panic every time some random peasant thinks there are monsters after them. There are monsters all over the place in this world."
She chuckled at the look Dale gave her.
"What? If there weren't, don't you think the bashers would have garnered more attention? Mutated horned rabbits that attack people?"
"We don't know if this is real, and it is a second-hand account as it is. We need to wait until we have more information,"
Frank condescendingly stated.
"Let's send out some trackers on horses. It'll be a few days before we know anything for certain."
They left, leaving Dale with a growing pit in his stomach. They were correct. But people living in the Phantom Mountains weren't prone to flights of fancy. He heard Madame Chandra talking about an unrelated topic as they walked away, proving that they were treating this far too lightly. Chandra was discussing with Frank,
"But if I buy enough of them, I can change the name to the Chantam Mountains."
"People would always spell or pronounce them wrong. They'd write it with an S as the Chantam."
Frank's voice faded into the distance. Dale decided to go check on the fortifications. He walked to the quartz-flecked new walls, feeling relief as he got closer, and they blocked the wind. The walls were not a ring around the city, but simply walls that blocked the paths needed for travel. The dwarves were relying quite a bit on the natural fortification of sheer cliff face to block unwanted travelers. A section of stone was rising slowly from the ground, doubling in height by the time he arrived.
"Hail the walls!" Dale shouted, feeling better after the exercise he had gotten from his short jog to the wall.
"Hello there!"
Beor shouted back, pausing from overseeing the work.
"What brings you all the way out here? There aren't any new ways into the dungeon since that first one."
"What?
What?" "Don't worry about it. We sealed it up."
"Right. Well, we got a report about a gathering of monsters at the base of the mountain, and I just wanted to see how the walls were coming."
Dale tried to ignore the previous comments.
"Monsters, eh?"
He pulled on his beard.
"This beauty'll stop just about anything, and we're working in runes so that it'll ignore other earth mages. We should have this last section done this evening if we hurry a bit. Now, we won't be staying here, so you need to post guards or things will just swarm over."
Dale tried to think about who would be willing to watch the walls.
"Crap. There is no one."
"Eh?"
"Nothing. I just need to find a way to hire on guards."
Dale thanked the dwarf and hurried back to the main areas. He found the city administrator after asking directions a few times and worked out a plan of action with the harried man. They would have guards by tomorrow, but they would mainly be lookouts, not fighters that could actually defend the wall. That would take much longer to accomplish, but Dale was still relieved that they would at least have advanced warning if something were coming. He was walking back to the chapel when Adam came running out.
"There you are! Hurry, he's waking up!"
Adam turned back and ran, Dale hurrying behind him. They walked into the stiflingly hot room, just as Tom gave a great shudder and took a deep breath. He opened his eyes, and a smile crossed his face. The smile turned to a frown, and then a yell of pain and rage.
"Ye gods! I knew that breakthrough was painful, but this just seems excessive,"
he groaned, trying to rub at his arm. He paused, a look of horror crossing his face.
"My arm?"
Tom roared.
"What foul deeds have been done to me in my absence? Was I neutered as well?"
Rose had a startled look on her face.
"We didn't check."
"I'm not being literal. Get thyself away from my small clothes, you!"
Tom barked at a cleric that was reaching a bit too low.
"Tom!"
Dale exclaimed loudly, demanding attention. "This happened in the dungeon. The goblins ambushed us and took you, cutting off your arm as they tried to get your warhammer." Tom calmed down as Dale talked, a reaction to having to listen to orders on a daily basis. He looked down.
"I cannot fight as I am. I am sitting, and my balance is off, nearly toppling me. The joy I felt at achieving my breakthrough has fled, and all I feel is shame."
"Oh, relax, you tight ass." Hans joined the conversation in his usual fashion. "All this means is that we need to do some specialized training. At the end of it, you are still going to get your arm back, so don't start wallowing. Plus, you just extended your natural lifespan by a handful of decades, so even if you weren't getting your arm back, giving up wouldn't be an option." Tom's face rose and fell and rose again, emotions playing across his features as Hans berated him into listening and thinking of the situation from a different standpoint. He stood and thanked Hans, moving to hug him.
"Back!"
Hans dodged the clumsy attempt at an embrace.
"I don't do half hugs, sorry."
Tom looked stricken, then gave a wet chuckle.
"You are such a terrible person."
I know, but it works for me. Hans laughed and slapped Tom lightly on the face.
Let's go meet the mage who is going to be giving you a new arm.